My cantu said something that was pretty profound. A very small percentage of people that try this business are successful. And so we've got a panel of women that are successful. And it's my suspicion that maybe even a smaller percentage of women even attempt it and are participants in it. So that's part of what we'll talk about, because they've been able to pull off something that not very many people have. And I have a feeling they've done it in different ways. So I'm going to start all the way at the end. Holly, I'd like you to introduce yourself, and then I'm just going to, if you would, work your way down and just give a kind of a brief description of what your business model is and when you got started.
Okay, my name is Holly McCann, and I do this business with my husband, Scott McCann. We've flipped over 150 houses in the last almost 6 years. Our original business model was to purchase at trustee sales and in the ballroom auction. The last 75 or so houses have been to buy through realtors, and we fix and flip, and I have about 15 single family rentals that I manage myself too.
Okay, that's perfect.
Hello everyone, my name is Iris Veneration. I run a real estate club called Invest Club for Women. My primary business is, Invest Club for Women. Woo! My primary business is to fix and flip as well. I've done over 200 houses in the last 10 years, and I hold over about 35 doors here in Southern California.
All right.
My name is Jennifer Shenbaum. I started in 2006 and 2007. Yeah. And I lived through those first very rough couple of years. I have fixed and or held 50 properties.
What area, I should have asked this, the area that you work in?
Primarily Los Angeles and North Orange County.
Okay. Nice. And the area, Iris, that you work in?
LA, Orange County, and now Inland Empire.
Okay, and Holly?
We're really broad. We do Inland Empire, High Desert, Low Desert, San Diego, Orange County, and now into LA.
Oh, you've expanded. Okay, we have another mic here. That's good.
And I think your last question, I buy directly from homeowners. I rarely buy off of the MLS.
Okay. Yeah. And you do that by mailers to them?
Mailers, the internet, online and offline marketing.
Okay. All right.
I'm Donica Patton, and I got into this business in 2005. Completely different career, and right now my business model, I own our own real estate brokerage with my husband and another gentleman. And business models changed. I'm currently fixing and flipping now. The past, I want to say 4 or 5 years, my main model was short sales. I kind of prided myself on educating homeowners and realtors on short sales and working with investors directly. I did write a book to help educate homeowners on short sales. And so now, my cheese has moved and getting back into fixing and flipping and holding. We currently have over 35 doors that we're holding on to right now. And I work in the LA County, Riverside, San Bernardino area.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Andrea. And I got started, I actually went to Bruce's boot camp in 2003. And after that, primarily, I did a lot of fix and flips. I have a fabulous business partner, Rick Solis. And then around 2009, I started buying and holding. And that's primarily what I've done. I do fix and flips, but it's been mostly buy and hold. And I'm around 60, 65, something like that.
Okay. I'm going to ask just this, like a broad question, and you guys, and that's, boy, that was disrespectful. No, broad question as in anybody can answer it. I knew I was going to get in trouble the second I took this on. Do women get a different reception when you go in this business from anybody, sellers or realtors? What is your feeling on that?
I can throw one in. I know in the past, when dealing directly with a seller, for example, I've had some interesting misogynistic comments or, you know, resistance. And I mean, all I could do is just, you know, recognize that and just pass it on to one of my male partners and say, you know, deal with this guy. So I think you just kind of, I mean, are they going to be out there? Absolutely. I think personally, I think women have a different approach. So I think you can come, I don't want to go into a huge generalization, but I think we come in kinder, softer, more attentive. We listen a lot. Not that guys don't do that, but I think...
No, we generally don't.
Yeah. So in some ways, I think that helps in, you know, the negotiation. It can.
I have a little different take on that. I agree with her, but one thing that I try to do when I am talking to a seller, dealing directly with sellers, is I pay attention to their personality type. So if I'm dealing with an older man that does, you know, stereotype a woman, I will bring one of my partners, my male partners, with me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know already if I walk in that door, they're already typecasting me as a woman that should be in the kitchen barefoot and pregnant and have no intelligence. You know, I mean, really.
One of the things we did in a boot camp was we looked at a whole bunch of examples of mailers, and we noticed that there were partner letters where there would be a man and a woman, and there would even be an Hispanic ability to speak Spanish. And I was just very interesting that they had found out they had to cover a lot of bases and the calls would, if somebody had a problem with dealing with a woman, then obviously the call would go to the man. Did you want to say something? Yes, okay.
Well, you know, I've been fortunate that, kind of like Donica, you know, when I need a guy, Rick takes those calls. But, you know, I'm usually the one that deals with code enforcement. I tend to get someone holding my hand, helping me, rather than he would get a different reaction.
Like he'd be in big trouble and
yeah.
You get a big help. Huh?
Right.
Okay.
So, you know, we've kind of played that to our advantage, and it's worked very well for us.
Okay. What about when, go ahead. Yes. Or are you just going to hold the mic?
Oh, go ahead. Honestly, I have ignored the fact that I'm a female versus a male investor may come to the door. And I think that, and maybe it's because I grew up in a more male-dominated family where I was treated just like, you know, one of the guys anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I don't have a male counterpart. So it's me. So either I go get the deal or I don't. So it's, I've chosen to, afterwards, if we've done a deal, you know, a seller will say, you know, I never thought I'd sell to a young lady like you. And I said, well, I'm older than you think, but thank you. And they said, you know, all but kind things. So I've just ignored it.
Okay. Go ahead, Holly.
Well, we haven't bought a lot directly from sellers, except maybe a FSBO recently. So I definitely pull Scott in to deal with contractors because I know they think they can take advantage of my femininity and that I don't know better, although I do. But he's this big, strong personality and big guy, and they don't even try and go there with him. But as far as dealing with realtors, which is my whole business model, I buy with them and I resell with them. I find it's very advantageous to deal with the men and the women. They love dealing with me and my outgoing personality helps. So,
Do you guys think you have an advantage on knowing what your buyers will want? Do you think women make decisions for buying houses? And do you have some insight with, like, I think we better do this? There's a show on the TV for buy and sells, and there are trustee sale buyers in Orange County, and the women and the guy team. I think they make a good team, but the woman seems to be really on top of what. Okay, we've got to get rid of this closet. This sink is no way it's going to stay, because she really knows that somebody walking in, no, that's not going to fly. So you guys think that's an advantage?
I'll answer. And my partnership, not so much anymore, because Scott's become very in tune to what buyers want. And I hope this doesn't offend anybody, but we've done a lot of houses in what we call gay neighborhoods in Palm Springs. And they are very picky in particular of what they want. and we have a great gay realtor that tells us exactly, you know, how he and his community would like it, and we listen, we take note, and my husband's getting very good at, you know, paying attention. In fact, my contractors who are not gay tease each other when they moved the staging once how great they did. They're like, oh, look, you're as good as these gay guys. And it was just very funny. So you just got to pay attention to your audience and seek the help of realtors if you don't know what they want.
Jennifer, I know you do award-winning rehab.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think I have a bit of a leg up in terms of choices. You know, if you give me a budget, I'm going to, you know, it's like the sale rack. I'm going to shop it. I'm going to shop it hard, and I'm going to put in some really nice materials, possibly for the same price as maybe another flip. And I think, and I've, again, received good feedback. It shows. And I think I can either have, you know, multiple overbids on a property, or it sells that much faster, or what. But I don't have anything to compare it to other than positive feedback, and the houses sell very quickly.
And your price point is probably generally higher than most everybody's, I think. What price point do you typically find yourself in?
It's moved up. I did sell one for 1.3 this year and one for 1.1 last year, but I would say 600 to 700 towards that number.
Okay.
When I also buy cheap in the lower range. It's just in LA County, it's harder, you know, to find that, but I'll buy anything.
I'd like a response from each of you on this. When you got started in the business, what was the best asset that you brought to the business? And also, what was your biggest weakness and how did you fix it? So, Holly, give Holly the mic, we'll come down.
I think my best asset was and still is that I love to talk to people. So I got a lot of good training in network marketing, believe it or not. And I had a mentor in that I saw who was great at building rapport with people, which I would hear Bruce's great stories. I've done his boot camp twice. But it's one thing to hear the story versus watch somebody do it over and over. So that was my greatest asset. And my biggest challenge was probably doing comps. I don't love to do that. So they say, do what you're good at and hire the rest. I just hand that off to Scott. So I can do it if I have to, but I don't like to.
Okay.
I think my biggest asset would be probably, you know, my outgoing personality, just not being afraid to talk to people and ask questions and find out. And you know, I ended up starting a club, for goodness sake, because I just wanted to have people around me all the time in the business.
And it turned into a game show, basically.
Yeah. well, you know, my motto is have fun and make money. So it's not, you know, if you can't have fun doing it, then it's not worth doing it to me. I think my biggest weakness was, you know, when I transitioned to being a real estate investor, I came from the mortgage industry. And I knew how to get loans, I knew how to work loans, and when I first started, I think that was also my biggest disadvantage because I knew how to not qualify myself, and I knew what wouldn't work, and I would get stuck in those places instead of just find solutions. And so, I mean, as time went on, you have to do what you have to do, and you find your solutions versus, again, being in that box from what I had known from my previous, you know, career.
Okay.
I think my biggest asset, and again, I, or to tell all of you, I quit a 10-year consulting career to stay home with two of my now three daughters, but I decided that real estate investing could be what I could become successful at and also be the mother and wife that I wanted to be. But again, I started in 2006, so I brought drive and determination, and the downside of that is I was incredibly naive, and in, you know, 12 to 24 months when, you know, the housing market crashed, but I turned the drive back on, and that's why I'm here today, so I figured it out.
Okay.
I would say my biggest asset is that I listen to people and I pay attention to who I'm talking to, whether it's on the phone or, you know, in person. And also having the, don't take no for an answer. Always find the yes, just that perseverance, that fighting attitude. I would say, honestly, the biggest, you know, difficulty I had is in 2004, I was a film producer. In 2005, I quit the film business to get into real estate, so I had to learn real estate fast. So that was, you know, a big learning curve, but I, you know, having that never quitting attitude, that's why I'm up here today. So,
I would say mine is similar to Donica's. I think my biggest asset was I listened to people, and I asked a lot of questions, and I knew how to close a deal because I knew nothing about real estate whatsoever. I just knew how to close a deal. I was fortunate, however. I did have Rick Solis, who knew a lot more about real estate, and I knew how to close deals. So we were a good team. But I would say the hardest part of anything would be the thoughts that are going on in your head. That's what you have to overcome.
Okay. So the negativity of...
Just the, you know, keep going. I'm very persistent. I don't quit. So that probably saved me because, you know, we sent out thousands of mailers and didn't get a response, and I did not quit. I believed exactly what you told me at that boot camp.
When you get a seller to say yes, and again, I want all of you to respond. When you get a seller to say yes to a wholesale offer, why do they do that? Why do they say yes to the final number? And if you're, especially if you're dealing directly with people, that's, I think everybody would want to know that because maybe they're not getting yeses. And so what are the pieces of that puzzle where you're getting a yes when other people are not? Holly, go ahead.
So we don't do the marketing direct to sellers, but we have had several times in the last year where we were dealing directly with them. One time was with a realtor, and he brought the four kids that owned the house that had inherited from their parents to the table. And I saw them, you know, initially be skeptical, but we sat down with them at their kitchen table, and it's that rapport building, making them comfortable, listening to them, understanding them, validating them, putting the offer out there for them, showing them seller finance versus cash. Which one do you want? And they opted for that seller finance. So just being compassionate, showing care and concern for them, showing that we know what we're doing, we're experienced, and they're... The whole deal is in good hands with us, and we have integrity. So,
okay.
I would have to say, any time I've ever had a seller say yes, it was truly because of the relationship I had with them. I had built something up where they just knew and trusted me, and knew that I would perform. And I can honestly say that, you know, in some deals that I've gotten, I was not the highest offer. I was not the highest price, but somehow, you know, they trusted me, and so they wanted to close with me. And so that is definitely the most important thing in any of the deals that I get is that trust and that relationship.
One thing interesting with Mike is that he meets almost nobody. Yeah. Do you intentionally meet with the seller?
Yeah, I actually do. I do as much as I can, yeah.
Okay.
I think I have a better... Maybe I'm not as good as Mike on the phone, but I have a better close ratio when I'm actually in front of them, so.
Okay. Jennifer?
I would say 50% of the time, I think, I have no idea why they accept my offer, but they do. but I think that there's, you know, I say that somewhat kiddingly. I do know that I've built the relationship, I've asked the questions, and if I'm going to make them an offer, I am 90% sure that they're going to accept my offer. I've understood what the motivation is, I've done the numbers, I've talked with the seller enough to know, you know, are we going to be close on an offer? So it's not, you know, just
slap something out there and see if they, you know, will accept it. But it is, it's building a relationship, building trust. I do what I say I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And sellers do give very good feedback saying you did everything that you said you would do and you closed when you wanted to or when I wanted to. And oftentimes that's more important than what the sales price was.
I'm just curious about, okay, we're getting to a yes answer in a first meeting?
Yes.
And over what period of time?
By the time I go see the house, I may want to drive some additional comps because especially if it is at that higher price point, mm-hmm. I want to be very sure because I don't want to come back later and have to reduce a price.
But you're usually closing it on the first attempt.
Yes.
It may be a
follow-up call within 24 hours of seeing the house or at the time that I'm seeing the house.
Okay. And yeah. Iris, what about you?
Gosh, I don't think I've ever closed on the first meeting.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, what I mean by that is, you know, it's always taken time to kind of build that relationship.
Okay, you've not attempted on the first. In other words, this is important because I think what happens is I'll talk to people that are in the business and I'll say how things going. Oh, it's great. We're really busy. I said, great. How many properties do you have going on? Oh, none. But everybody loves me. And what they do is they have balls in the air. And they've never been able to get a yes answer, but they think people like them. And so that's why I wanted to know. You're meeting with them and getting it done, and Jennifer. And then, Iris, you're not closing until you're sensing it's time, but you're going to do it and not have to redo it. I don't think you're coming back twice.
No. Okay. By the time we're at contract phase, we're done. This is a closed deal.
Okay.
But I've never been able to just receive a call and just close it then. You know, it's about, again, building that relationship for me, which leads to the close.
And I think that's part of the experience part of what happens is you get experience. It's like your antenna is up and you realize that this is going to be accepted. Yeah, I remember when I was doing this full time and talking with people, I would leave the house and I had never even met the person, and I would be able to say, I just bought a house, and I hadn't ever seen the house or the person, but all the pieces of puzzle were replicating a yes answer before I showed up. And so that's nice to know. Yes, Jennifer.
Oh, I would add that when I have an initial phone call with a seller, that's where we build a lot of rapport. I get a lot of the answers that I would want to hear to think that they'd accept an offer if I went and met them at the property. When I go meet them at the property, it's so that they can see me
right. And
know I'm a real person and I can walk the property and, you know, size up what repairs would need to be done. But most of the work is done on the phone.
So you don't go see a lot of properties without really thinking you have a very high percentage of a yes answer.
It takes a lot to get me out of the house.
Okay. No, that's a very important statement. If you're in the education business and you hold a boot camp and you take live phone calls or you have people pursue deals, what's typical is you have a long list of properties to go see, but you have no reason why you should. And, you know, if you're in charge of the boot camp, you'd go, okay, well, let's talk to these people. And you'd find, okay, well, they don't have equity or they don't have motivation. So why are we starting our car? And that's what happens. It kills most investors. They waste almost all of their time on something that would never have worked. I don't care if you're Mike Cantu or anybody on this panel. You didn't ask enough questions to really figure out they have what I want, motivation and equity, and they have the ability to say yes, all of the people. Do you guys ask if everybody's, you know, everybody on title is going to show up, you know, be at the meeting? Because that's disappointing when that happens. Okay.
You know, for me and how I do business, it's interesting. I pay attention to the person on the phone, whether I need to meet them in person or close the deal on the phone. It really depends on the type of person and the area of the property. Certain parts of LA County, I know I have to go and meet them in person because that type of caliber of person is less trusting. So that's where I build the relationship is when I meet them in person. And I, you know, always close when I meet them in person the first time. Like you said, I really screen the sellers. I really screen them before I walk out that door. Because I don't want to waste my time, and that's important. My time is valuable, but it really depends on, you know, sometimes I'm closing the deal on the phone and sometimes I'm closing in person. But one thing that, you know, when I'm closing the deal that I've heard over and over, which motivates me in this business, is having the seller, when we're signing the contract, say, you know, I really appreciate the time that you spent with me and you educated me about real estate. That, to me, is what motivates me every day to do this business, because it feels good that the seller, you know, you're not a salesman to me. You came in here educating me, letting me know that you may not be the best source for me.
Okay.
And that's everything to me.
It's actually also very, I know you're not using it as a technique, but it's very disarming. In other words, when somebody actually lays down their guard and tells you the truth, then you have to actually have something you can solve.
Yep.
And it's hard to do that unless you're very comfortable in your own skin. What if you actually meant that? You know what? I may not be your best solution, but I'll tell you what, I've sat in front of a lot of people. Why don't you tell me about your situation? Let's bombard it with solutions. Right. I may be one of them, I may not be.
Right.
But you know what? All of a sudden, you're on that same side of the table. When Ben Gay wrote a script for us, when we were talking about, that's exactly what he did. He said, well, basically, we're going to deal with each other straight. I'm going to tell you, you know, the real deal. And all of a sudden, you felt like you were a team working against a problem. And I think that you take a lot of pressure off yourself if you'll conduct business that way. If you feel like you have to harm somebody to get what you want, you won't even want to pick up the phone on an ad call, because you're going to be going, oh, man. You know, because you just won't feel comfortable with the process. So you make the process a lot easier for yourself, realizing that we have a cool business model. We buy real estate, and it's painless and easy for whoever's on the other end of that. That's not normal. All of these people on this panel sell properties. You ever get to the finish line? Have you ever had an escrow call you up and say, well, your closing check's ready, and you didn't know it was coming? That never happens. There's always a pile of stuff to get over. And so that's what we solve for other people. They just get a check. And that's not normal. That's why we get paid. Yes.
I would say I also, in qualifying a seller and disarming them or, you know, their view of me, I say, you know, I know we're talking and I know you know I'm a real estate investor. Why aren't you listing the property on the MLS?
Yes. You take.
And they're stunned.
Yes. Why?
And I said, I'm not a realtor, so I'm not asking, you know, for the listing. I would like to know why you aren't considering it, and maybe you should.
Right. And that's like once again, this isn't my show in a sense, but I can give you an example where the answer was just very strong. I don't feel comfortable with realtors. I've had a bad experience. Or one of the houses I bought, I still have as a rental in a gated area. He was a narcotics officer, and he didn't want anyone going through his house. So his answer was, I am not listing my house and having people go through it. But the suggestion of it takes away their ability to bring it up later as a negotiating. In other words, why don't you just list it? And they'll give you a reason. And then once that reason is established, what they're telling you is, okay, you're really going to sell your home to an investor. And then you have a chance to say, this is how this world works, and you're part of that world. So that's very important. Okay. Andrea.
Well, I think when I'm dealing with sellers direct, it's trust.
Okay.
For sure. Because a lot of times I am the lowest offer, and they still went with me, and it was because they trusted me.
Okay. Now, the one thing I didn't hear is their circumstance. So just real quickly, desperate or not?
No, not always. Usually, you know, Mike is brilliant in how he buys and his words and his questions. So when he said he asked a lot of questions, you know, Rick kind of makes fun of me because I can be on the phone for 2 hours. I don't care because it's going to come out. But I do always ask them when I'm trying to figure out why and they are hesitant. I say, I don't know if I'm the best option for you. So if you would share with me your situation,
if I'm not, I could refer you to someone or, you know. So I build the rapport and the trust.
Okay.
I think also to get a yes, you have to have some strength in your voice. No wavering. That's your offer. And you have to believe it and feel confident. I feel like I am like their best solution to their problem. I truly believe that. Truly believe that.
Okay.
So now if I'm dealing with realtors, and I don't meet them in person. I've rarely met sellers in person. I've become friends with some of them after, but... if it's realtors, I'm meeting them in person. I'm going to lunch with them and that type of thing if I want to buy from a realtor.
Okay.
I'm building a long-term relationship.
If you could answer these two questions, we're going to run out of time. I'm going to ask one more follow-up after this. I look at fellow investors as, and I look at realtors as. Okay? So, Holly, we'll start down with you.
My friends and teammates and collaborators for both of
fellow investors and realtors.
Yes.
Okay, so what you're saying is most of what you're buying is via relationship and it's repetitive.
Yes.
Okay. Now, you found that to work in 2013 in a market that exploded?
Yes.
Okay. Iris?
Oh, absolutely the same. Collaboration all the way.
With people that you've already done business with?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Most people are going to go, well, wait a minute, I tried to deal with the MLS. Are we talking listings that don't hit the MLS necessarily because of relationships and trust?
Yes, I mean, you know, an agent will always have some sort of pocket listing.
Sure.
Or someone I've already established a relationship, they'll say, okay, here's a deal, I have to list it tomorrow. Great.
Right. And by the way, if you think that listing agent is doing a disservice for the owner, then you don't appreciate what we bring to the table once again. Because Mike Cantu just said, what was his, how many times was he in escrow with a two-bedroom house? Okay, six times. The agents that's going to deal with either one of, or any of us, is going to know that this is going to happen fast, and it's for sure, and it's going to end, and we're not going to have a trail of, and usually maybe when you get those phone calls, there's a reason that this house might be particularly not suited for a retail buyer because of maybe the loan's not going to happen very easily or whatever. And so you put yourself in a position where you get that phone call repetitively from that same person.
I just wanted to add to, you know, again, I believe this is a business of collaboration, and there's so much abundance out there. There's a lot of deals out there. And just because I have a few established relationships with a few agents doesn't mean that any of you can't have your own established relationships. There's so many agents out there as well. So
sure. And there's a lot of new agents, right? This is like they're new investors, so there's always somebody they don't know any of us either. Jennifer?
Again, I don't deal with other investors or realtors too much,
okay.
But I did just buy a pocket listing from a realtor who I was introduced through my stager. But I always look at them as resources, potential, you know, partnerships down the road. Nothing negative whatsoever. In fact, you know, if we can learn something from each other, great. But I'm probably more limited in my interaction with them.
Okay.
You know, it's funny. My experience is a little different than theirs. But, you know, investors I see as my team. We're partners. And that's how I look at investors. I haven't dealt much with realtors, but the interesting part is, you know, I own my own real estate brokerage. I'm licensed. So what's funny is that even though I'm trying to look at these realtors as a partner collaboration, their ego gets in the way once they find out I'm licensed. So it's been an interesting dichotomy to break down that ego and realize we can be, you know, a team. They get competitive, they get, it's very interesting. The ego gets in the way, but that's what I've noticed, you know.
Okay.
So.
I would say it's a collaboration, too, definitely.
I mean, you guys have become almost like a thoroughfare of referrals, right? You get stuff called to you, and...
Yeah, and I haven't had the experience Donica had, though. I have a broker's license, and I don't utilize it on purpose because I don't really like that part of the business. I don't like the realtor part, but maybe that's why I get along well with the other realtors. Plus, they trust. They know that if I bought something from them, they're going to get the resale.
Okay, that's a very important part. All these people want to do well in an industry that very few people do. What's the one piece of advice that you guys wouldn't say, this is why I was successful, and maybe this would be important to do? Holly doesn't want to do that one, and she wants to think.
Just one thing?
No, I don't care. Whatever you think is
important.
For
me, I can answer that very quickly. Never, ever quit. Have that perseverance by far. That's the only reason I am up here today and I am successful. I persevered. And whenever it got difficult, I said, I am not quitting. I can do this business and I'm going to do it. And I just kept instilling that in my head.
I'll go next. For me, what I realized was that I don't have to do this alone. To me, team is very, very important. And there are so many things that I don't do well. And what I learned how to do is to delegate and get people to help me where I wasn't good so I can create a business out of this. It's not, when I decided that this was a business instead of just a hobby, that's when everything changed. And in order to run my business, I need to be on a team, and people were so important to have the right people around me.
Okay. Hallie, have you warmed up?
Yeah, I was basically going to say what Iris said. So when I meet people, and I'm even meeting strangers, and I ask what they do first, and I'm always looking for ways to give and help people. And when I'm meeting realtors, I express that I want them to make money. When I'm talking to contractors, I want them to make money. So I bring an attitude and a feeling that they know that I want everybody to make money and everybody to win. And I think that gives people an even stronger desire to be on my team and work with me and grow the business.
I saw something that, I don't know where I saw this, you had a crane delivering a bathtub.
Not a bathtub, a portable jacuzzi. Yeah.
Oh, and this was in a new residence?
Yes, my personal residence.
Yes. I just had to point that out.
The crane guy got he made money too.
Oh, good.
I would say I just, as Donica was saying, I remain determined, and I tend to find humor in, you know, my trials and tribulations, and when Diane Nyad was, you know, on Cuban soil and couldn't even see Key West, I swear that's how I felt in the first year of real estate investing. Like, I have no idea where I'm going, but I'm going to get there. Mm-hmm. And as she had to try five times to get to Key West? Yeah, first property I bought and sold at a loss in Riverside, second property that I bought next door, because it was so smart to just buy the house next door to flip, and sold it at a loss. And then the third one I still own, because we decided that was a smart idea to keep in 2008. but I could sell it and make money today. So, you know, each time I have to go back to my husband and say, you know, can we try just one more time? Just one more. And he's looking at me with huge eyeballs. But he let me do it. And it's a good story now.
It's a very good story now. What's interesting is that this is the only common theme between all of the people that are on a panel. They would not give up. And that's, you know, that's the one thing that all of them had. And there's so many other differences from backgrounds and so forth, but there was something. And that something is a reason. Now, we're not going to necessarily ask the reason today, but it's something that you have to come up with, because this business isn't easy. You went 0 for 3 and found a reason to kept going. You mailed thousands of letters and didn't get a deal. You know, when it starts out like that, it's so easy to quit. And if you quit, I just think you've just really messed out on an industry that can reward people better than anything else I've seen. So hang in there. Okay, we have...
Persistence, of course, yeah, no quitting. But I would say what's going on in your head, self-talk, I would say that's it. Attitude, self-talk, and doing actions that will make you money every day, the things you don't want to do every day, making those a habit.
You've mentioned kind of the mental side of it to where, and quickly, do you guys have any daily rituals or habits that you do to keep that up? So we'll read ahead.
I read, like Mike, every day. Every morning I read, and it's always something that has to do with business or self-improvement every day.
You read or listen to books on
tape? I do both. I'm only, like a junkie. So,
I'm only
you
kidding.
Know.
When you listen to the interview, by the way, which I have done with all of them, she owned a book on tape store, so that's why.
Yeah, I do that as well, for sure. And then I write down what I'm grateful for. And I have positive things I say to myself every day to reframe.
Okay.
For me, I read every day one book that I wanted to share with all of you if you haven't read it, that I try to read religiously, and talking about mindset is Beyond Positive Thinking. It's a logical way of how to get the brain in the right thought process to obtain what you want, because you can obtain anything you want in this life as long as you train your brain appropriately. So that's been very helpful to me. The other thing that I try to do every day is an hour or two of just doing something that invigorates me, that makes me feel good, that is, you know, empowering me, whatever it is. And for me, now it's looking at my one-year-old daughter every morning and spending time with her.
Only 2 hours?
I have to limit it to that, you know, because I can literally get lost in her because she's my why now in life. But yeah, just every day trying to do something that empowers me, makes me feel good, that is taking care of me.
Okay.
You had asked, or when we were doing the interview, we were talking about why there aren't more women or female investors. Mm-hmm. When there's a disproportionate amount of women realtors.
Right.
And I would say, even though there is quite a bit of collaboration amongst investors and so forth, I think women tend to have more self-doubt and tend to put their families, other people first. We're very, I think, nurturing and supportive, and it is harder for us to put ourselves first. And I think when you see women who are successful at whatever they do, they've found a way to put themselves first. Not to say that they haven't taken care of what they're supposed to. It's just it's a different balance. And we've had to, I think, over the generations, work our way out of that. So hopefully we'll start seeing more.
Do you have any daily things that you do to keep your...
No, I have 3 daughters, all under the age of 12, and my husband's a fireman and gone half... the month, so it every day is just...
It's busy.
We just as we say in our family, and it's a quote from, Finding Nemo, just keep swimming.
Just keep swimming.
And it gets my kids to laugh and move on with whatever their issue is, and you know what? It makes me laugh when I'm having a bad day, and I'm just like, just keep swimming, you know? Appraisal didn't come in, just keep swimming. You're gonna sell it at a profit, just keep swimming. And it works.
All right.
So that's all I got.
Okay. Iris?
For me, I have, like what Donica was saying, I have to do something invigorating. So for me, I have to work out every day. I have to get up and exercise, because really no one in the office wants to be around me when I haven't had at least my morning run. So, yeah, and then part of that, I was just talking to somebody in the break, and part of that, when I do run or exercise, I have a mantra, a set of affirmations that I just run through my head, kind of like what Diana was saying when she sings a song while she's swimming. So same thing, and it's all positive, so it just gets me in the right place first thing in the morning.
Okay.
I love to exercise daily, and I also listen to positive books, self-help books, business books, relationship books, anything like that in the car. And I also have Audible on my phone. I can play it on my phone. So I've listened to the book Charisma by, I think, Olivia Fox. That's a good one. Write that down. The Charisma Myth. And I listen to it over and over and over, trying to soak it in. So that's a great way to do it if it takes a while to sink in.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, we have run out of time, but it's been very enlightening and a lot of fun. And I'm so glad I've survived it without messing up too bad, except for the broad, we're going to cover broad. Yeah. So thank you. Let's give them a big round of applause.